the Trump administration working to make it easier to buy American-made guns overseas, greasing the wheels by shifting the oversight of non-military arms sales from the Department of State to the less restrictive Department of Commerce. Until now, U.S. officials have treated the export of civilian firearms as military sales, similar to missiles or jets, throwing up a host of hurdles.
The Federal Open Market Committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 1 to 1.25%. This accommodative policy should support some further strengthening in the job market and a return to 2% inflation, consistent with our statutory objectives. In the third quarter, however, economic growth will be held down by the severe disruptions caused by hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria.
Skilled workers overseas hoping to land a job in the United States are facing a much more uncertain fate since President Donald Trump took office. According to data reviewed by Reuters, Trump's administration has been putting new roadblocks in the way of those seeking the coveted H-1B visas needed to land temporary work at firms such as Apple and Google.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's September 21st, 2017. Glad to have you here for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. Lots to cover this morning in the program. In a minute, we'll bring in our thought leader today talking about human resources and some issues in the news recently, specifically that Google case. Remember the engineer who wrote a bunch of stuff about another worker and policies at Google? We'll talk about how this is really giving HR managers headaches all across the country. And a little bit later in the program, Andrew Challenger will be here from Challenger Gray Christmas talking about the seasonal hiring market. It's looking very strong, and there are indications the reason why employers will be adding those jobs is because there'll be lots of deals to be had around Christmas time. All of that's coming up, but first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures off now 11 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are also lower. Around the globe, futures and stocks generally in Asia are lower. The Hang Seng is up just a little bit, though, up 37 points. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai are lower. The Hang Seng by about a quarter. In Europe, markets are generally higher this morning. The FTSE's up just about 0.1%. The DAX is up about a third. The CAC is up about 0.5%. In terms of commodities this morning, gold and silver trading a little bit lower. Crude oil is at $50.29 a barrel, which is up almost 1.5%. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Some developments since you went to bed, probably last night. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says it could have fined Wells Fargo in excess of $10 billion for its illegal sales practices, but instead settled for $100 million. We're getting a clearer look at what happened there, but thanks to internal documents that were released by members of Congress this week. The CFPB also had evidence that the bank's sales problems went back to at least 2006, far earlier than what Wells Fargo originally admitted to. The documents were released as part of a report by the staff of the House Financial Services Committee. You probably heard this story yesterday. The mayor of Chicago says the city is seeking nominations for potential sites to locate Amazon's second headquarters here. Amazon earlier this month announced that it's hunting for a second home outside of Seattle. The company says it'll spend more than $5 billion and house as many as 50,000 employees. The mayor yesterday said that the city is looking for partners to help determine what sites would be the best. You heard in the opening montage the Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen yesterday during her news conference, leaving interest rates alone. They're going to start unwinding the balance sheet. They also are suggesting that there could be another rate hike later this year. As a matter of fact, interest rate futures are now pricing in about a 70% chance of a December Fed rate hike. That's according to CME's Fed Watch tool, which is up from about 50% prior to yesterday's meeting and under 40% just a few weeks ago. So now 70% possibly for the rate hike coming at the December Federal Reserve meeting. This morning's Thought Leader Conversation focuses on human resources and some of the headaches that have been caused and concerns caused by what we saw happen at Google earlier this year. Our thought leader this morning, Brett McKittrick, is here. He's the SVP and Senior Human Resources Consultant at Associated Bank. Brett, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Lots of things have happened in the news from a human resources standpoint since you were here last, and we'll take a couple of them right off the bat. But one that was sort of had a local connection was the situation at Google, where one of the top engineer employees there did some posting, and it became public, and they eventually had to fire him. There are a couple things going on there. He talked about pay equity at Google, but he also talked about some other allegedly sexist sort of things. What's your takeaway from how that situation was handled and why we all should pay attention to it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, the software engineer in question wrote a memo that was circulated amongst employees at Google, and then it became viral and leaked to the press at some point. And that memo talked about pay equity issues, how Google has handled diversity in the workplace, mostly gender diversity. Mm-hmm. The memo also contained a lot of stereotypes about women and this software engineer's view about female employees versus male employees. And a lot of those were insightful, incendiary comments. Google got wind of this, fired him on the spot, basically saying, "You violated our company culture and code of conduct policy." Now, Google more or less had to fire the guy because this went public, number one. Secondly, from an affirmative defense standpoint, it really shows that, hey, Google, at least for show, doesn't tolerate any gender diversity issues. So if a female, for instance, in the future were to file a claim of sexual harassment or gender harassment in the workplace, Google can point to this as an affirmative defense, say, hey, we don't tolerate this type of behavior. Now, with that being said, certain parts of the individual's memo, whether you consider it grounded in reason or not, certain parts of the memo were probably considered protected under a couple of different acts and pieces of legislation.
Protected in what sense?
So a couple of things come into play here. Number one, First Amendment's off the table. You know, the First Amendment, the free speech that everyone thinks about, that's where you can maybe go out in your yard and say, hey, America stinks, and the authorities can't come at you for that. Different than hate speech, for instance, but that's what free speech is. Free speech doesn't exist in a private sector, in a workplace environment. So, for instance, you as an organization, a company, as an employer can say, you as an employee cannot say these certain things unless it's protected in another way. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act prohibits employers from retaliating against employees or discriminating against employees if those employees are making justified comments that oppose unlawful work practices. So, for instance, if I challenge my employer and say, you're not diverse enough, or you have a racial discrimination problem in the workplace, they can't fire me. My employer cannot terminate me or discipline me for making those types of comments. Title VII, on the other hand, does not protect me from making racist or sexist comments in the workplace. That's something very different. And they certainly can retaliate against me or discipline me for that. So this engineer's memo actually contained both sides of that. So parts of that may be protected under Title VII, parts of it may not. But then there's even another act, the National Labor Relations Act, which we think of more in the union context because it was born to protect employees' rights to unionize and band together. But the National Labor Relations Act protects an employee from making comments, or protects an employee from an employer discriminating against or punishing an employee for making comments about their terms and conditions in the workplace. So, for instance, if I complain to a coworker about my pay, my employer is not allowed to fire me. That would be a violation of that National Labor Relations Act.
And Brett, let's talk a little bit about the motivation, the mode of communication involved. I'm betting that in the case of this Google engineer that we were talking about before the break, he never thought that his memo would get leaked out into the wild. But isn't the warning here always that you should never, ever put in writing, either in a memo or an email, something that you don't want discovered in a court case?
Absolutely, 100%. And most employers have policies about whether it's social media, in which we can get to in a little bit, or email use. If I'm using a work computer, then I have no right of privacy to that email. That email is done on my company's server, that my company owns that computer. Then I have no right of privacy. And anything I say in an email, even if it's just from me to you and we're not copying anybody else, then it can be exposed and it can be used against me.
The other part, you mentioned social media. Lots of companies are developing social media rules. Not all of them have them. How is that different from, let's say, the email part of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's hard for companies to keep up with the changing times, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and whatever's next. So what can an organization do to, quote unquote, control their employees and what they say? So you have a national labor relations issue because if I'm just like I'm talking to you in the hallway about my pay, I could send an email to you complaining, boy, my company doesn't pay me enough, or these conditions stink, or the night shift is awful. They can't stop me from making those comments. So a social media policy that maybe prohibits me from making disparaging comments about my company in a public setting or my company's customers, you know, if I say my company stinks and has terrible customer service, don't use this as a soundbite, by the way. they can fire me for saying that because that could get out to the public. That could be posted on Twitter or Facebook, and that's disparaging against my organization. If I say, however, I think my boss is a bad individual, or I think he or she manages poorly, and I think I'm paid too low, if I'm making those comments, again, about the terms and conditions, that's considered to be concerted activity protected under that Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act. It's a fine line.
Yeah. And not only a fine line, this can be not – we've talked about the danger to employees, but the danger to employers also exists here because, you know, you don't want to create a climate, I would imagine, in a company where you don't want your employees sort of helping build the company up and talking to each other about how to do that. And it seems like some of these things would qualify as that, right?
Absolutely. It becomes a cultural issue more than anything. And it's a matter of what kind of reins do you want to put on your employees? And what kind of control do you want to have? And as a company, how much do you actually control the culture of your employees? Or is it the employees building or making that culture?
Right. Because I've seen a couple of articles here who say, you know, solving this problem at Google would be just pay everybody the same. You know, that would be one of the easy solutions, but it's not that easy, is it?
It's not that easy at all. And, you know, you hear of states, and we saw what was happening here in Illinois, where a Pay Equity Act was put into place, passed by legislature, and the governor vetoed it for some reasons based on how the methodology of that bill came to be. Now, you see a lot of cities and states legislating what pay equity should be for those companies that are doing business in those particular states. Well, it's a legislative thing, but I think what's a bigger problem from an organizational standpoint is pay transparency, which is what you're alluding to, Steve, and the whole idea of unconscious bias, right? And if you think about – and that's a training issue, and that's a systemic issue in our society. If we have an unconscious bias saying, well, this individual probably isn't worth as much as that individual, and maybe unconsciously it's because that person is female or because that person's of a different race – if management thinks in that regard or HR thinks in that regard, that's something that you can't legislate. That's human nature, and it's that unconscious bias that only through training and time that we can possibly overcome.
You know, one of the other big things that happened in the news recently, and this is sort of along the same lines but a little different, was after the Charlottesville rally, we saw a couple of the people who were in those photographs holding the tiki torches fired.
Yeah.
So this goes beyond just speaking, writing an email, it goes to attending rallies and that sort of thing too, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're seeing that. And it's a matter of, does that person have a right to attend that rally? Absolutely. That's free speech. That's First Amendment. Does the company he works for have a right to discipline him or terminate him? Absolutely. Because that's something that isn't protected. It has nothing to do with concerted activity, the terms or condition of that person's employment. It has nothing to do with what the company is doing from an unlawful employment practice standpoint. Anything else is fair game. If the person's an at-will employee, that person could be fired for the company not liking how they look that day.
If obviously there's an extreme part of the Charlottesville story where you had, you know, members of the KKK and white supremacists who were doing this protesting, and anybody listening would immediately condemn that. But let's say you have somebody who's going to a Trump rally, just a regular Trump rally, or going to a Hillary Clinton rally or the Women's March. Could all of those things put an employee in jeopardy in the same way?
I think we're in a point in time in our history where, yes,
wow,
absolutely. Yeah. Depending on the culture of that organization,
right,
you know, and depending on maybe the political bent of that particular organization, that employer as well.
I'm guessing that communication is probably the best solution in some of this. From the employer side of things,
Are these things outlined clearly in the manuals that are handed out, or is this something that there needs to be a better job of making sure employees understand?
I think for a lot of organizations, communication is the biggest problem, and organizations can do a much better job through their internal policies or employee handbooks. Specify, even give examples of what's acceptable or not acceptable. And having a blanket practice of saying, look, we're a publicly traded organization, for instance, and we have clients that might be of various, you know, political bends, if you will. Don't say anything insightful.
Yeah.
Don't say anything pro-Trump or anti-Trump, because right now it's a no-win battle.
We talked about social media, but I think some of the other avenues where some of this discussion is happening are Reddit, all of those places where it may not be the traditional social media that you're thinking of, but the web blogs and places like that. These are all ripe. Are employers going and surfing around on these things looking for employees who've done bad things? Or
I don't think employers have that kind of time.
Right.
However, when something bubbles to the surface, like in the Google situation, an employer can't ignore it.
What advice would you give to employees in this matter? I know I mentioned earlier that don't put anything on paper or send an email that you wouldn't want discovered in a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that generally a good rule of thumb? Just be careful what you're doing. What would you suggest?
Yeah, I would in that regard. Now, again, I'm an employment lawyer, so I see the worst. And so it's probably easy for me to maybe be on a more heightened alert in something like that. And I'm very careful in how I word my emails as a result. But I think that's exactly right. You know, we do a lot of harassment prevention training, I should add. And when we talk to employees about, look, it's a common sense approach. Don't say anything that you don't want to say to your daughter or your wife or your mother, for instance. Don't say anything that you wouldn't want to say to your next door neighbor, assuming you like the next door neighbor. And from that common sense approach, know a couple of things. One, know that anything could be discovered from exactly what you were saying, Steve. And the second thing, understand the times in which they live and know that intent is often not called into or doesn't come into play. It's how the message is received.
Brett, good conversation. It's good to see you, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
And Brett McKittrick is Senior Vice President, Senior Human Resources Consultant at Associated Benefits, which is part of Associated Bank. You can remember, you can listen to all of our Thought Leader conversations, our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. You can also follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter, and you can head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership, where you can see more and read more and hear more about all of our thought leaders.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here with us on our Thursday edition of the program. Number of retailers have announced plans for major hiring this holiday season. This is shaping up to be a solid season if you're looking for a job. Andrew Challenger is Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas, the global outplacement and executive coaching firm based right here in Chicago. And he's with us this morning here in the opening bell. Andrew, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
We're happy to have you. This is of all people, have your finger on what's happening. Did I set this up the right way? Is it going to be a solid season for people looking for work?
Yeah, there's some early indicators that holiday hiring is going to really increase this year, despite it being a sea change year for retail. We've seen a huge amount of closures of brick-and-mortar retail stores, 6,000 closures this year, 67,000 job cuts in the industry. The whole industry is going through this pivot away from traditional brick-and-mortar retail and towards e-commerce. So while they're cutting some jobs in the front of stores like cashiers and salespeople on floors, they're doing hiring in the background in warehousing and shipping and handling and transportation of products that are sold online.
And we've seen a couple of the big ones, Target among them, Macy's, each of them. I think Target was 100,000 workers they say they want to hire. Macy's is about 22,000. Are those strong numbers compared to other years?
Really strong numbers and surprises. Target in particular leading it out with 100,000 new hires that they're planning to make during the holiday season. That's up from an average around 70,000 over the last couple years. So it's a huge spike, and it was a surprise and maybe an indicator that big retailers are going to be bulking up their hiring for the holiday season in a way that we weren't really expecting.
Another one in there was 1-800-Flowers with 8,000 workers. And yesterday, UPS announced they're going to add 5,000 people in the Chicago area. Andrew, does this mean that we might be also finding deals, lots of competition for sales among retailers?
Yeah, absolutely. Along with the new hiring announcements from Target, they announced that they're planning to drop prices across their stores. That comes in response to announcements from Amazon and Walmart that they're going to be slashing prices. The expectation is it's really going to increase the amount of products and gifts people are buying this holiday season.
Is the disruptor in all of this Amazon? I'm interested in your thoughts of how Amazon has affected all of these. I know you touched on it a little bit earlier, but have you ever seen anything like this?
It truly is Amazon. They have been stirring the pot for a while, and we've been expecting this shift from e-commerce. But this year, it seems like major retailers are just scrambling to try to catch up to Amazon, and they're announcing huge, massive cuts of stores across the country as they refocus their efforts on e-commerce. That's just the way the all holiday shopping is moving going forward, and doesn't mean there aren't jobs to be had, but they're just different jobs. They're not those typical cashier and salespeople jobs.
You know, speaking of Amazon, I have to get your thoughts too on the idea of this Amazon HQ2 possibly coming to Chicago, 50,000 jobs. I mean, that seems like it's almost unthinkable. It would be a huge deal for the local economy, though, wouldn't it?
It really would be. There's a lot of reasons. It's important for Chicago to fight for that facility. It'd be such a great boon to our local economy here. And you know, they already have opened up some warehouses around the Chicagoland area. So, you know, hopefully, they're getting a good sense of how great Chicagoans are in terms of employees and work ethic.
Have you guys been handicapping this at all? I mean, if you had to take a running guess at who the top candidate cities would be for this, what would you say?
I think we're certainly in the mix. There's a lot of companies. Amazon has made a little bit of a spectacle about it. So there's companies are you know, cities are competing to try to get Amazon to move in. And I think Chicago's certainly in the top five there in terms of competition.
So back to the holiday hiring season, can you offer people any advice about how they should be getting ready for this? And I'm guessing getting their resumes going. What other tips would you have for them if they're planning to look for a holiday job?
Yeah, always important to show up in person. A lot of these jobs never get posted online as companies are just, it's individual store managers sometimes that are scrambling to get enough employees in the store and trained for the holiday season. It's happening now. The bulk of those hires happen in September and October as companies prepare for the holiday season. So it's a great time to be going out in person to stores, asking managers if they have opportunities and telling them you'd really love to work there, and you'll be flexible with your hours.
How many of these jobs do you think might turn into something permanent? What does the history tell us about seasonal jobs that turn permanent?
Yeah, it's more and more so right now. Back in 2008, when the job market was in a very different place, these jobs were temporary. They went away at the end of the season. But right now, unemployment's really low, and employers that can find good, great employees during the holiday season are tending to keep them on throughout the rest of the year. It's an environment where employees are really sought after. Employers are fighting to retain and attract good employees with low unemployment out there. And so this is a great opportunity. You see it as almost a long-term job interview for a couple months during the holiday season. You can really get long-term offers at a quick pace this year.
All right, Andrew, great advice. Thanks for being with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Andrew Challenger, Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas, the outplacement firm and executive coaching firm based right here in Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're watching futures that are weak to negative this morning, flat to negative. Dow futures off about 8 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off in the single digits this morning as we head toward the opening bell. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Soybeans and cattle in the spotlight yesterday in commodity market trade. Live cattle futures notched their biggest gains in 11 months, boosted by optimism for higher cash cattle prices and some technical buying. And higher cattle sales at a weekly online auction helped trigger the rally as well. So, at the end of the day, in the cattle market at the Mercantile Exchange, we saw the nearby cattle contract up $2.95, nearly limit up, and October feeder cattle up $4.15 a hundredweight. Live hog futures also added to the momentum with a little bit of a gain yesterday. The December hog contract up 30 cents for the day. Now, the grain market, more exporting of soybeans helping the market. USDA said soybean sales among the 10 largest ever announced through its daily reporting system, and that dates back to 1977. Analysts said the portion of the sales to unknown destinations were earmarked for China, which is by far the biggest importer of U.S. beans. So we looked at a pretty good day in the soybean market. Corn also moved a little bit higher yesterday, and the wheat market moved higher. Not a bad day, livestock and grains. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, September 21st. The Labor Department reports today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Freddie Mac releases this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. And today, the Federal Reserve reports on U.S. households' net worth for the second quarter. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, September 21st.